crosses up Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
Got it.
She
got it.
Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds, and welcome into the WZND studio for this edition of The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. The best big three since the Miami Heat are back in the studio together again. We have Dane Dreyfus, myself, Mikey Frinelli, and Uncle David Moses coming from Seattle last weekend. David, how is your niece doing, first and foremost?
Oh, she's doing great, and I think she would love to hear us as the big three. You know, when you put us together, who is the LeBron? Who's the Wade? And who's the Bosh in that situation?
You can't let me answer that. All right, I'm LeBron. He would say
Yeah, he's gonna say it.
All right, fine. Well then, David's older than me, so he's Chris Bosh.
I'll take Bosh.
I guess that leaves me as Dwayne Wade. I don't know any logic behind that.
I mean,
we're from the same state.
Yeah, we're all the local boys, so we're all just Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, exactly. We're all from Illinois, so we're all Well, I mean, David's actually from Chicago, so you would be Dwayne Wade.
You know, I got a killer mid-range shot. So just
no, scratch that. I'm Dwayne Wade. I want to be married to Gabrielle Union. I changed my mind.
I always forget that Dwayne Wade played for the Bulls for that one awesome year.
Yeah. I loved it. I was eating it. You know what? They would have beaten the one seed Celtics with MVP Isaiah Thomas if Rajon Rondo didn't get hurt.
Rajon Rondo got hurt. Yeah, that
he
was another player.
Carrying that entire year.
Defensively,
not
especially.
Entire year, that entire series, actually. It was just,
He's going to make a great coach someday, Rajon. I know, weird way to start the show off with Rajon.
It's always good to start the show with something fun, but we're coming into you live from the WZND studio, and we're going to get back out of the NBA and into some Redbird recap first and foremost, where we had a football game on Saturday at Hancock Stadium, the home opener, and the Redbirds did not disappoint, winning 28-21 against Valparaiso. Now, I was there. I don't know. Were either of you guys in attendance for that one? David, I think you're still gone, correct?
Yeah, I was still in Seattle for that one.
I actually had to surprise my mom back home because she had just gotten back from Seattle the week before, so Demos had to do a little switch.
Everyone's in Seattle except Russell Wilson. Everyone's in Seattle.
Oh, my gosh. Too soon.
Broncos
boy,
country.
Was
left
he
wide.
Catching it. Those Boo Birds were out.
Oh my goodness. But anyway. Valparaiso and Illinois State. We got to keep it local. The Redbird recap, 28-21. Guys, what about this game and in your research you did, even though since then, what was it about this game that went well for the Redbirds and allowed them to get their first win?
Can I start off with the turnout of Redbird Nation?
Absolutely.
I don't know what it was. I feel like maybe it was just the shock and awe of seeing like the Wisconsin fan base and the support. But Wanker's Right would say that Redbird County was out in full force. Like, let's ride.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that's probably definitely what it was. They saw week one. How much of a big turnout Wisconsin had in our season opener. They were like, we're not going to, you know, we're going to support our birds. We're going to, you know, they're coming back home and they want to see a full packed house. And it seemed like that's what it was.
Yeah, the energy there was unmatched. I stayed for the full first half and then I ended up going home. But I had some friends that stayed for the second half as well. And they said it kept up this whole way, except in the second half, they went a little dry. It seemed like it in the first quarter, both teams scored a touchdown. In the second quarter, Valpo scored a touchdown, and Illinois State scored two. In the third, Illinois State had one, and then in the fourth, just Valpo scored. So ISU really came out to a strong start, 21 points in the first half. And then the over was in question for those over bettors there in the second half.
Why do you look at me when you say that?
Because I know you're our resident money man, betting expert, so I want to hear what if you were sweating that one out.
We're too young to bet the under, but we also legally can't bet on Illinois schools while we are living in Illinois. So
good point.
I would not bet on that.
Good point. I didn't have a bet on that one either because I'm 20. But
I'm not a college football guy, though. I don't like betting because it's like, I guess the saying goes any given Sunday, but I'm like, any given Sunday, I know what's going to happen. Any given Saturday, not so much.
Too many games to follow.
Literally. And I, as a Badger fan, first I have to watch them beat up on my Redbirds and then absolutely blow it to Washington State. So it was a rough weekend. I went 0-1 in fantasy football, but we can't keep getting off on tangents. One thing I want to mention about the game against Valpo was I'm really having a fun time having Zach Anixed as our quarterback. Like, it feels like we haven't had this presence, like, in a while at QB. His completion percentage is great. Only one turnover today compared to the two or three he had against Wisconsin. But also, too, our boy, Wanker's right, 21 carries, 101 yards. And you know what? My rule of thumb when it comes to running backs, you average over 4 yards a carry, you got a good one.
Huge friend of the pod status.
But yeah, I just think it's going to be a hit and miss going forward that you need to be a guest on the Red Zone podcast and then go out and have one of the best games of your college career so far.
I mean, I got a video of the Redbirds kick return touchdown. It was Jalen Carr on the return, and the other return man back was Wanker's right. So I got my phone out to film in case it was Wanker's right, and I was going to post it on the ZND Twitter and say, friend of the pod, Wanker's right, runs one back, just in case. And I take a video, and they did run it back, but it was the other return man. What are the odds? He did lay down a nice block on that play, though, if you watch the video.
You know what? That's what completely goes underrated. You know what? It doesn't go down on the score sheet, but we see it.
But before that play where Jalen Carr in the second quarter ran one all the way back 98 yards on a kickoff return, the reason why there was a kickoff randomly in the second quarter was because Frankie West, back on a punt return, went off his hands, and Valpo scooped it up and rushed it into the touchdown. That was just a sloppy touchdown. And the Redbirds kind of made everyone forget about it right away by running one back on their own. But Frankie West was not returning punts the rest of the game. They gave the duties over to Brock Anixed.
But, you know, I say it all the time that that's probably one of the most toughest positions to play on a football field is punt return. You got probably six or seven guys screaming right at you with full speed. And if you don't put that hand up, they're going to run straight through you. So it's not that I understand, you know, the challenge of him maintaining and keeping that ball, but – you know, I'm not surprised that, you know, he muffed it.
And from my perspective watching, it wasn't a fair catchable punt. I mean, it was well over his head. It was kind of more on a line. And he kind of like misjudged it. He wasn't far enough back, so it wasn't going to roll the way into the end zone either. So he jumped up to try and grab it, and it went off his hands almost in a way that the Packers did against the Seahawks back in 2014. I had to add it in, but that was a kickoff on an onside.
How's Tom Brady's marriage going?
Yeah, we'll get into that later, but but, yeah, kind of in the same way as that Packers thing. Went off the hands, and he just couldn't salvage it. And Valpo recovered in the end zone, and the ref's hands went up, and a groan went through Hancock Stadium.
You know, winning games off of special teams is nice. Losing games, this is coming from a Packers fan once again, is awful.
I remember listening to that game on the radio as a kid. Like, we were driving back from somewhere with my family, and I remember hearing that game. And as a Bears fan, even then, I was like, this is awesome. Wait, I don't even know what just happened.
Are you talking about the Seahawks game that they lost us to special teams, or the 49ers game they lost because of special teams?
Yeah, that was, you know.
It's okay, we got Rich Bisaccia.
Or you could talk about the Bucks game they lost because of special teams, because he sent out the kicking squad early when Rodgers should have gone for it against the Bucks in 2021, I think that was. I believe
it was 2021, yep.
Yeah, so.
I've had seven concussions, I don't remember.
we keep getting off on tangents during the Redbird recap. Let's talk a little bit more about ISU men's basketball releasing their MVC schedule today. They have an interesting schedule ahead of them for a new-look team. Coach Ryan Peden's leading a younger squad. And I don't know, I'm looking over the schedule. It seems like they're going to have some fun games early on. Belmont coming to town for the first home game on December 4th. And that's a new MVC opponent. That's someone who we haven't seen in the Valley so far this year.
You know, I was reading the schedule vertically, which just goes to show you the type of person I am. And I got really upset because I'm like, man, I don't have a home game before I graduate. But it turns out I do, and it's Belmont, because I thought I was looking at the schedule vertically. I had Indiana State labeled as the first home game. That's not the case. But talk about a new look Birds. Got a new look Missouri Valley. We go to Murray State for the first game of the year in the Valley. And you know what? That might be the toughest test of the year right off the bat. It seems like a congruency between the football and basketball team is that they're getting tough tests. I mean, Murray State's no joke.
Well, what's interesting is our first three Valley games are against the new Valley teams. And Murray State on December 1st, that's at Murray State, then home against Belmont on December 4th, and then at UIC on December 29th.
I will actually be at the UIC game for December 29th because my friend who's an alumni of ISU, it is his birthday the next day on Thursday, and my best friend goes to UIC. So it'll be us three in the crowd. I will not be in the student section. I will be cheering our Birds on.
The Valley runs so deep, even all the way back to Chicago.
You know, Mikey, you talked about how the Birds are kind of a new-look roster, kind of a younger team. I kind of saw it the opposite way. You know, you're looking at it, they've got a handful of guys that are fifth-year players, and then the rest of the team fills out with juniors and seniors. Do you think that could be a potential benefit.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
advantage.
I mean that he had Peyton brought in a handful of transfers, what I meant by new look, but it's not an unexperienced look.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's just complete. And even by new look, I mean you don't have the same stars that were the ones you fell back on last year, and Cy Chapman and Antonio Reeves. But you still have the Liam McChesneys and the Ryan Schmidts of the world who will find a way to lead with the little experience they handled last year in the starting roles. They're going to be starters every day now, so we'll have to see how it works for them.
Well, I'm really interested to see how Seneca Knight works into this offense, too, because he was a stud at San Jose State. Not as great in numbers at BYU because it's a little bit of a bigger school, but transfers here, obviously we lost Antonio Reeves to Kentucky, which the valley runs deep. I'm excited to go watch some SEC. I'm still cheering him on. I'm going to go watch some SEC basketball and hopefully see him tear it up for John Calipari. But focusing on Ryan Peden, I want to see the way he fits Seneca Knight into the offense because he's a certified scorer. He's a bucket.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be an interesting mix of the new transfers because we had about three or four, and then with the old guard that was under Dan Muller.
And another thing to watch out for is you got a couple guys who – you know, like to put the ball in the basket. It's going to be interesting to see how Peden spreads that out and balances the floor a little bit, you know, allowing all of his guys to, you know, put in some, you know, contribution to helping them win games.
Also, too, with, like, everyone loves people who scores the basketball. Like, it's the flashy part of the game. But when I went to a couple games last year, I found that one of the things they struggled was rebounding, more on the offensive side of the board, because I felt like Liam McChesney was a great part of the team, huge on defense. Like, I felt he averaged like 1.5 blocks a game,
mm-hmm.
always lit up Redbird Arena. Like, that was probably my favorite part. You get your couple highlight reel dunks. I'm a defensive guy. I like the intangibles. But on the offensive side of the ball, it felt like we could never snag an offensive board. So it would be interesting to see how the team adjusts this year and tries to find players to fill those roles that weren't filled under Dan Muller.
And, you know, I always say that the offensive rebound is one of those effort-based stats. So it's going to be interesting how Peden and his coaching staff enforces, okay, we need to box out. We need to position ourselves in the best, you know, spot to be able to get offensive boards, you know, giving us more opportunity to score.
Yeah, offensive rebounds are one of those things. I like what you said about effort-based stats. I mean, it's there for you if you want it. You just have to be the one to go up and get it. It's kind of like the Guwagi stat in football, where if the pass is up there, you have the right to go up and get it, assuming it's not 10 feet over your head.
And then you obviously have those instances where you're just going up against probably a 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", even guy who, you know, is just using his willpower to get bored.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the most part, I always look at it as one of those stats that, you know, it's based on by effort and basically where you're positioning yourself on the court.
It'll be an interesting month of December for the Redbird men's basketball team. I think it'll be a good way to peek at how they're going to play this season because you have a handful of Valley games. You have a handful of random out-of-conference opponents. I shouldn't say random because, I mean, they're obviously calculated by Coach Peden and he talks to these other coaches and decides where to play. But they're going to open the season at versus Wooster. It's an
Wooster
exhibition. That's the day before Halloween. Then they have Monday, November 7th, also hosting Western Illinois. That's the first real game. And then they're on the road again at Eastern, Northwestern State, and then versus Northwestern State. They're going to go back-to-back against Northwestern State, a little bit of a one-and-one.
Home and home.
Yeah, you go, we go. November 12th, Saturday, and November 17th, Thursday.
Yeah, I'm excited, too. And, like, going back, we hung out with Coach Ryan Peden a little bit at Festival ISU.
Yeah.
I would like to say certified cool guy. And also, just talking to him makes me want to go rebound for him. I'd run through a brick wall for that guy.
He brought his own. For context for WZND on the quad for Festival ISU, it's like a welcome week type activity. We had our own prizes we were going to hand out to people if they answered sports trivia questions with Coach Ryan Peden. He showed up with a couple of jewel bags in hand with Redbirds basketball t-shirts, and he didn't leave until he gave out all the Redbirds basketball t-shirts.
And
the other prizes.
I heard that there were some pretty nice shirts, weren't
they?
We're a Nike school,
Nike,
baby.
Nike Redbirds basketball shirts, and he was still just giving them to kids, even if they got the question wrong. He'd be like, who is the coach of the Redbird men's basketball team? And they're literally talking to him. And they would go, I don't know, Reggie the Redbird? And he'd go, oh, you get a shirt anyway. And he gives him one, yeah.
I think there was a Terry Kinsey thrown in there, and he's like, not quite. That's our awesome new president.
Yeah, he's just trying to get brownie points everywhere he can, and it's working. Everyone loves this guy on campus. And that's kind of how Dan Muller was, too, at least not up until the end, but he was a likable guy. Like, I mean, I don't think there's anyone who disliked Dan Muller as a person, per se. He was a bad coach sometimes towards the end, but and so it's always good to have that.
Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah.
He was a bad coach
towards the end, honestly. But I've openly said I loved always talking to Dan in interviews and stuff like that. He was awesome, especially student media. And he was in a Pantograph article like over the summer. I say we still have him on the show.
I would love to have him back on the pod.
I think he'd be the first to admit that it didn't go well towards the end at ISU. He obviously had higher expectations than what happened.
That'd be something to see. You know, usually afterwards, once you had a chance to reflect on your experience, to have a really better outlook on their whole experience as a whole. So he could have a different, you know, reasoning as to why it just didn't work here with the Redbirds.
Yeah, I mean, he had 10 years to try and make it work, and unfortunately it just never went his way. There was a couple times where they got really close, though. But
and Antonio Reeves raved about him, though, as a coach.
Oh, that was the biggest thing. Antonio Reeves was, like, all about him. And that's what I was confused, what exactly was going wrong. Because if the team agreed with the coach, maybe just the team wasn't good enough.
I think one of the things was they were just always so young, and they didn't have that college experience pedigree that most, you know, when you come in and play in Missouri Valley, you know, you're going against some experienced guys who just – have had done their due diligence in the league and so far in their college career. So that's one of the things that I think really played a factor into it is the youthfulness of these Redbirds teams the past few years.
Yeah, and you've got your, like you said, David, like with the Missouri Valley, I feel like it's one of the most underrated conferences because we usually have, like, we're not like a conference champ bid team. We usually have one or two bids, whether it be your Loyolas of the world who always love beating U of I, or like your Bradleys when they played Michigan State that one year. So it's no joke of a conference. And you know what? Dan Mueller had Wisconsin, and we keep coming back to Wisconsin. He had them on the ropes last year. I think that was also like a December 29th game. Like we were on winter break for sure.
So quick shout out before we end the Redbird recap and go to break. I want to give the ISU soccer team a shout out. The women's soccer team started the season 0-6, and now they are on a two-game win streak ahead of their match at UIC on Sunday. So that's the start of their Valley schedule. They go 2-6 to start the season out of conference. But, of course, always good to get two wins before the in-conference season starts.
It's not how you start. It's how you finish.
Absolutely. We'll be right back here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
I'm Dan Mueller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to The Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND.
That was former Redbirds basketball coach Dan Mueller, who we have not talked about on the podcast so far today. I don't know if we even had that.
It was on purpose. What timing in that?
Yeah, seriously. Was that on purpose?
That was on purpose, yeah.
Yeah, no, I love having that one on it. That's the type of bump that we're never going to get rid of. We'll have it next week. We'll unveil it next week. We did make a bump with Wankers Wright after the interview last week, so we'll have that in the rotation. And he did his best Russell Wilson impression as well. So
that's all we're going to spam for the next few weeks is Winkers. We are on the Winkers right train right now.
Seriously. I mean, and he had, like Dan said, he had a great game right after coming on the show. So there's no reason to stop talking about him.
It annoys me when people are, like, talented at football. And then the fact that he could probably just take my job with that radio voice.
Yeah, he was great.
Oh, my gosh.
So, of course, now that we have another segment to talk about, we start the segment talking about the Redbirds. And now we're not getting off on a tangent, right? Oh. but here we go on a little bit of some Major League Baseball. And I know I might try and sit this one out a little bit, at least talking about my favorite team, because the Cubs swept the Mets, had to put it in there, but they're not playing for anything. But Dane and David's favorite teams are red hot right now.
Yeah, I'm going to start with the White Sox. You know, they know that they don't have time on their side to claim, you know, and keep a playoff spot. They're being decisive at the plate, you know, hitting some good home runs. I think they're playing really good baseball going into the later parts of the year. I think this is the perfect time for them to kind of get on that little hot streak that they've been on. And you know, I just, you know, as a Sox fan, you just gotta be happy with the results that's happened so far.
I can promise you, as a Cubs fan, we are not happy with the results.
And personally, as a procrastinator on my homework, I find desperation to be the best motivator.
Oh. Oh man.
Yeah. So the White Sox definitely looking hot. And I said earlier on the last show that rotation is not one you want to run into in the playoffs.
No.
And especially like the lineup getting hot, seeing Yo-Yo hit a home run. The catcher. Why am I blanking on his name? Hit me with his name.
Yasmani Grandal.
Yasmani Grandal. Thank you so much. But they're getting hot at the right time. And then I'm going to switch it up to my Cardinals, who just set one of the coolest records that I think is probably going to go unbroken. Is that fair to say?
Until another team has a franchise ace and a catcher for 15 years or whatever it's been.
And in the league we're playing in now.
It's not, exactly. Loyalty's out the window. Yeah. So, it's probably a pretty unbreakable record. You go ahead and tell the people.
Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina make record 325th start as a battery. And a battery is basically just terms for a starting pitcher-catcher combination.
So and it's 355?
325.
325.
Which
wow.
I love that number, too. Yeah. I don't know why that's just so satisfying.
Well, I heard that Wainwright's going to keep it coming next year, apparently.
Oof.
Or at least as of right now, that's what he's saying. He's might have a little bit with him. Fogerson's our next guest, Braden Fogerson, says no, but I thought I heard that maybe this wasn't exactly it. Has he declared it just like Molina and Pujols? Or
I'm pretty sure it's his last
year. Did he declare
year.
It? Okay, maybe he declared it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought I heard something about it. And it looks like Braden Fogerson's given us a little tip on it, so we'll get back to that one. But
we'll ask him when he comes on.
Yeah, when he comes on, we'll see if he has something to say about Uncle Charlie and Yadier Molina. Because that's, I mean, That's a great combo. Even as a Cubs fan, I have to admit, that is a killer combo, and those two have, know each other, like, perfect. And you've talked to, I mean, I've talked about it on the show before, but I've also just talked in general. The thing that a good catcher can do for a good pitcher is make them a great pitcher. Mm-hmm. When a pitcher has a catcher that he's comfortable with, they get just even better. So yeah. there's things they do. There's things they can do in framing. There's things they could do in knowing which pitch they want to pitch in a certain moment that, I mean, kudos to them. That's awesome.
But you know, they also have a tendency of knowing their pitcher, and when it gets tough, when they get behind the numbers, they have a 1-2, 1-3, a 1-2 count. It kind of helps when your catcher is really there to kind of calm you down. Mm-hmm. Get you back into, you know, the swing of things so that you can go ahead and finish that inning or at bat, you know, as fast as you can. Here's a perfect example. Actually, I don't know if you guys play the show, but if you get down, let's say 1-2 at bat, it'll show a little screen where the catcher is trying to calm you down. And I attest that to real life. You know, that's what essentially they do. It's like they're their coach on the field.
Sorry, Dan, I don't mean to cut you off. I'll let you go in 1 second, but I'm just updating the story. CBS MLB last night said Molina said he will retire after 2022, but Wainwright has not committed to any future plans. My guess is what that sounds like is he's just not the type of guy to rain on Pujols and Molina's parade, and he's just going to, you know, quietly retire after the season's over.
Well, here's the thing. Is Adam Wainwright, I believe, is at 193 wins.
So, oh, he wants to stick around and try and get to.
And I think the team's good enough to where if he stuck around for one more year, he would make it to 200. And I'm also a big proponent for Pujols if he doesn't quite get to 700, which I'm actually going to go on a limb. I think he gets it this year. I think he's hitting the ball.
What's he at now? 697?
I think it's 697.
Okay, yeah.
Which I
was watching last night in the ninth when he had a chance. He had a nice double.
He's hitting the ball great. He's one of the best left-handed bats.
Yeah, he had a nice double. And of course, the stadium kind of groaned at it, but it's a great base hit. I mean, he's got to be coming close to a career number of RBIs too. He had an RBI double last night.
Oh yeah,
he's got to be getting close to somewhere in the top 10 for that too.
I think he's top 30. But like, we can go away from some of our favorite sports team because it was one of those days in MLB where it was just record after record after record. J-Rod, Julio Rodriguez, the electric rookie from Seattle, joined the Elite 25-25 Club, which he's only the third rookie in history to ever do that. I can't remember who else did it. I believe it was it's Acuna and Trout. Those were the other two that do it. So it's been happening recently.
He's with some good company then.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and speaking of good company, how about Vladdy Jr. hitting his 100th career home run as a 23-year-old?
Absolutely ridiculous.
Crazy.
I can just go back to the home run derby he was in and how much power he hit the ball with, and every time I hear a stat about him or see him on the highlights, I think about that and just think about just his sheer power that he has under the bat.
And that headline about J-Rod was from ESPN, and then also too, not even mentioning the fact that Aaron Judge hit his 56th and 57th homer of the year, and we're on another record watch of him breaking Barry Bonds' 72 in a season record, which I think that's a little bit more unrealistic.
He might get the AL record, which is what, 60, 61, I don't remember, but 72 is
72
probably
is
a lot.
It's a stretch.
Yeah.
It's Mantle's record, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's a Yankee who has the AL record, and it's 60 or 61. Because I know every time he hits another one, they say getting closer to the franchise and league record.
And then
not NL.
Both leagues are on Triple Crown watch, too.
Yeah.
With Goldie, he is currently sitting behind Austin Riley, who has 36 home runs. Or I think it's 36 home runs. Then you've got Schwarber still in the mix. Goldschmidt sitting at 35. Kind of power's dropped off the past couple weeks, but he's been hitting the ball like crazy. Aaron Judge is sitting in around fourth for average. He's batting .310. He's running away with RBIs and home runs. The craziest thing that Judge has done and why he's running away with this MVP race, too, is the next highest home run total hasn't even reached 40 yet. He's at 57.
Oh, yeah. He took off. And he kind of took a little break for a while, too, right after the All-Star break, too. So he's taken off. He could have already been past 60, but, you know, he had to take a little breather there, get some Gatorade, just like in the home run derby.
I was sitting with my roommate at dinner yesterday, and he was like, dude, I thought a week ago I checked the stats, and he was sitting at 45 home runs. I checked today, 57. I'm like, that's baseball. It's a streaky sport. Oh, we just got a text from former Red Zone host Leo Stoddart. It is Roger Maris who holds the AL record with 61. We would not be here without you, Leo. We stand on your shoulders, and we appreciate the listen.
Crusader Nation, let's ride.
Broncos country, let's ride.
So, yeah, Leo out here giving us a little tip about the Yankees franchise record. Roger Maris, 61 home runs. I think he'll probably get that. I would think. Knock on wood for his sake, but he's got to get that, right? He's only, what, four away now from tying it? See, and there's 2 weeks left in the season.
I feel like we've labeled myself as the betting man of the show, too. And if you told me before the season, like, the line was at 40 home runs for Aaron Judge, I'm like, oh, he's missing 60 games. He's an injury waiting to happen. But he fixed his swing. In the offseason, there's a video of him saying, I'm going to hit 50 this year. He looks great. Contract year two, everyone plays better in a contract year.
So what type of money are we looking at after a season like this?
$500 million.
Oh. It's got to be somewhere, right?
I like how I say that so casually.
Yeah, you said that casually, like, 10 years ago, that would have been astronomical. But so nowadays, it's pretty common, actually.
Interesting thing about Judge, though. Even if he does tie Maris at 61, he would still be in a tie for 7th because there's 6 other NL seasons that have been better. But Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire both did it a couple different times. Bonds had 73, McGwire 70, Sosa 66, McGwire 65, Sosa 64, Sosa 63, then Maris 61. So Maris is the highest AL player to get 60 plus home runs, but there's 6 other better NL seasons. That just in the 90s.
All legitimate, too. All legitimate. No steroids involved.
Nothing
involved.
But I mean, I watched a documentary not too long ago about that year where Sosa and McGwire both were on that leaderboard. And that year, I mean, revived the sport. Everyone was watching, and apparently right after a lockout, too. And that was 98, I believe. So, yeah, that's something they needed.
Well, I'm interested to see where this sport is headed, too, because I feel like offensive numbers are down a little bit, especially in regards to the long ball. Mm-hmm. But with the shift becoming illegal in the next couple of seasons, I feel like a guy like Joey Gallo, we're going to start seeing, like, hitting, like, 350. And that investment the Yankees made in trading for him, they're going to be like, what were we doing, man? Why'd we trade him to the Dodgers? And then he's going to be hitting the ball for average as well as power. So you'll be seeing him hit, like, 350 with 30 home runs and 120 RBIs with the shift being illegal.
Well, what's interesting is I said something about this the other day, like, multiple players on different podcasts this year have said that this year it seems like it's more of a dead ball kind of thing. Like they finally weighed the balls down a little bit, except for the primetime games, weirdly enough, which obviously makes sense. They want more home runs in those games. But then you have a player on the Yankees, which, yeah, they play a fair share of primetime games, but who's going for a career high of home runs, not even for his career high, for like the MLB American League career high.
And I'll be honest with you, the AL MVP race has to be the most MLB thing ever in the sense of that it's going to be two Angels, and they're nowhere near the playoffs. It's going to be Ohtani and Trout nominated because Trout has put up video game numbers. He's like third or fourth in home runs in the AL, and he's missed a good chunk of games. Ohtani is killing it on both sides of the ball, and the Angels sniff nowhere near the playoffs right now. And it's one of the saddest things in sports.
7th straight losing season for the Angels. Longest active MLB streak. That whole time they've had the greatest baseball player of all time statistically. And the last 3 or 4 years they've had the greatest two-way player probably of all time.
Since Babe Ruth.
How do you waste that much talent over a certain course of time?
It's an art form. It's crazy. Sure. And then Joe Maddon gets fired midseason. Doesn't really do anything for him. It's crazy how
right when he got a mohawk.
Yeah, that's a funny story if you look into that. But yeah, that I don't know how you waste that much talent. I mean, they didn't surround him with good enough pitching for years. And who was their answer this year? Noah Syndergaard? Years after he was good in the Mets?
Yeah.
So, quick question for the both of you. You know, the MLB is implementing a couple new rules in the next year, I believe, with the pitch time of the larger bases and the modification on the shifts.
Yeah.
How do you think that's going to affect the game as a whole?
I hate it, personally.
The pitch timer, I think, it depends on how it affects warming up and stuff, because I don't know if you saw the clip the other day where I forget who was playing, but it was a pitcher that was coming in the game, and he was warming up, and a pitcher had just gotten thrown out, and he wanted some warm-up pitchers. It was Ryan Tepera. Who does he play for? Just came to my mind.
Formerly the Cubs,
yes. But he was getting warmed up and wanted warm-up pitchers, and the umpire was like, no. And he was like, why? And the umpire was like, because I said so. Baseball is stuck in its ways.
Speaking of pitchers for the Angels, Ryan Tepera. Okay, I didn't even know that. Yeah, but
oh my gosh. So there's that, and then I also think too something that's interesting with the Angels is I think Ohtani moves this offseason, and I think you could see him in a Cubs uniform. Depends on if they're willing to sell the farm or not. But the rumor has it is that they're going to be spending money this offseason.
Yeah,
you sound disappointed.
No, I'd love to have Shohei Ohtani, but I also don't want to sell the farm, and it's not like we have a window to win. And I think Shohei Ohtani sees now that in order to win in the MLB, you got to get in a team that has more than just one other good player, and especially good pitching. And the Cubs are in no position to win with either of those aspects.
Let me ask you this. You add Shohei Ohtani, and you give up, obviously, your Pete Crow Armstrong and Brennan Davises of the world.
It'll take so much more than that, too, is the thing. And we'll have to give up all the good pitching we've developed. Oh, the Angels, you kidding me? You know what the asking price was for Juan Soto the whole time? The asking price for Shohei will be even more.
He's younger and has term on his deal, though. Isn't Ohtani's deal expiring after the season?
Yes, but that's the other thing. Why would a team sell the entire farm for 1 year of Shohei Ohtani?
Because they would re-sign. Ohtani was rumored to come to the Cubs before the
Angels. No, I remember. He was in the top group, and that's why I'm glad that we brought in Seiya Suzuki, who's another international free agent who decided to come play for the Cubs because he got a check, and we have him on a five-year deal. So.
And Ohtani's going to add like 10 home runs to his total if he plays for the Cubs because they have the dumbest thing in sports, the baskets at Wrigley Field.
No, there's other little excuses. The Fenway Park has the short right field fence and all the above. The basket is not.
This just in, big market teams cheat. Shocking.
Yeah, well, yeah, and then my other suggestion was going to be the short porch in right field in Yankee Stadium, but that's like the biggest market.
Literally.
I was going to say, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with, saying Ohtani would much rather go to an established team with a little bit of help. You know, some players are starting to kind of gravitate towards, I want to be the leader of this team. I want to take over. And it's kind of the LeBron effect where you bring in the pieces that you want and that you need. And I think that he is a player of that caliber where he could do that if he came to a...
Give me an example in the MLB of a player that wants to be in a small market team, though.
Well, the problem is, and kind of going off what David said, I agree wholeheartedly with that, but it's also just at this point about money. Mm-hmm. Why else is Chris Bryant signing a mega deal with the Rockies? Why is Bryce Harper signing a mega deal with the Phillies 3-4 years ago? I mean, it's just, you have these all-star players.
Why is Wander Franco signing a mega deal with the Tampa Bay Rays?
Right, exactly. You have these players who are looking at just the money side of it, and they assume that if they sign a mega deal, they have job security for 10 years and $300 million, and then eventually they'll put a good team behind them, which is a fine thought process to me.
It's a thought out, and it's a long process. It's not going to happen instantaneously, and I think it's, you know, more so for those younger guys who, you know, like I just said, are young and they have a few years. You know, the older guys, they're kind of chasing, you know, they want a legacy. They want to put their names into a category where not a lot of players have, and I just think that's where, you know, it's at right now.
We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, Braden Fogerson is going to join the show. We're going to talk a little bit about something we don't normally talk about. We're going to get away from the Big Four and head to the racetrack to talk some NASCAR with Braden, a big NASCAR fan in his own right. And then after that, we're going to get into Pick 6, our weekly NFL segment. So we'll be back here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Illinois State infielder Owen Miller, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
There's a few reasons why you might know Braden Fogerson's voice. He's the producer of Bird's Eye View, a monthly specialty show here covering news at WZND. You might know him from the news and sports team as a sports broadcaster if you listened to the football game last week. Or you might know his voice from getting your morning coffee from the normal McDonald's. Of course, Braden Fogerson, our good friend. We call him Burger Ferguson because of our 271 class. That somehow started me and Dane and Andy...
Andy P.
I'm not going to try and say his last name. Petrushevsky, I think. And
nailed it.
Yeah.
For someone else.
Yeah, I'm not going to try and say right there.
Petrushevsky.
Well, because he says it, and he says, say Petrushevsky. So, okay.
But he does admit he doesn't know how to say his own last name.
So that's how he makes it up.
Yeah.
I hope Andy P. is listening. If he's not, we'll have to tell him we discussed his name. Anyway, Braden, how are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here, guys.
So, Braden, as I said, has been with ZND News and Sports since, I believe, last fall, correct?
Yes.
This is your third semester.
Yeah, this is my third semester, and I think it's just become a every semester segment that I get to be the resident NASCAR expert to talk on Red Zone. It seems that I'm about the only person in news and sports that really follows NASCAR, especially as religiously as I do. But I'm just excited to be able to tell you guys about, you know, what all's going on right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're about to force feed you these questions.
Right? This is about to be a Q&A, but let's go racing, boys. Let's do it.
Can I start it off?
Yeah. Sure.
All right. Give me someone to hate. Who is the villain of NASCAR right
now? Okay, so the villain of NASCAR over the past 10 years is actually my focal point as far as the people that I'm going to talk about today. That is Kyle Busch. I will hold off on him for a minute because I have a lot to say about him and the news surrounding him. But in the meantime, the villain in the garage area right now is Ross Chastain. Now, Ross Chastain used to be a driver that never really won. He had never won coming into this year. He raced, you know, B-plus type equipment and did pretty well. He was known as a very aggressive driver, but had never won. Now he is with a new team called Trackhouse. that is co-owned by Pitbull. And that team has been able to win three races, two of them with Ross. And basically every week, ever since like this summer started especially, it has just been a new driver and then a new driver that he is getting into, that he is rubbing the wrong way, that he is, you know, wrecking. He's wrecked Denny Hamlin like three different times by now. There are just so many drivers in the garage area that owe him. And to me, I think he's a fun driver to root for. I kind of just root for the Chevys, honestly, so I kind of root for him just because of that. But, you know, he can be a polarizing figure for sure.
Now, let me ask you, you say wreck him, as in so Denny Hamlin, you said he wrecked him three times. Emotionally or car physically?
No, Denny Hamlin's had a strong relationship with Michael Jordan. And, of course, you guys know who Michael Jordan is. But
My favorite actor, Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan. So he co-owns a NASCAR team with him. And basically all of his life he's been sponsored by Jordan, and he's basically tried to put on that Jordan mentality of, like, being super competitive and, you know, things like that. And so if Denny gets upset, he's going to get mad, but he's not, like, going to be crying or anything like that. He will just kind of tell you how it is, and, you know, it's up to him now to decide whether he's going to wreck him now that we are in the NASCAR playoffs and see, you know, whether Hamlin wants to finally pay him back.
So explain to me how the point system works in racing. I somehow relate it to, like, maybe the FedEx Cup in golf or hockey, how you get points for winning and stuff like that. But explain to me how that works. I see someone that some of these guys towards the top have 53, some have 40, 43, et cetera.
Yeah, so the NASCAR point system works. You get, at the end of every race, the winner gets 40 points because that's the top, and then it goes down the list till 36, which gets like four or whatever. But then you also add in stage points. So there's two different stage breaks in each race where they will call a caution. The top 10 will get points the same way. You know, the top driver gets 10 and back down to nothing. And that all adds up throughout the season. So that way you can reward consistency throughout a race a little bit sooner, or a little bit better. And if you have a great car but you're blowing engine late, you can still get rewarded a little bit and get some points. Winning gets you into the playoffs. You get 16 slots, and each new driver that wins, as long as they get in top 30 at the end of the regular season, they are locked in the playoffs. And for the first time this year, we had 16 different winners heading into the playoffs. Kurt Busch is a driver who won at Kansas earlier this year, and he had a bad injury. I was also going to talk about that a little bit for this new next-gen NASCAR race car that everyone's using. But he has been taken out. He has not raced since middle of the summer because of a bad injury and a qualifying accident. And so when the playoffs started, you know, he left the playoffs. He said he wasn't going to take the waiver to put himself in because he wasn't going to be able to race. Instead, they gave one extra slot to some other driver. That would be Ryan Blaney. And then Bubba Wallace, his teammate, basically just switched numbers with him because you still get points for – there's driver standings that everyone pays attention to, and then there's owner standings, which has more meaning in terms of making money, but mostly it's never really much of anyone's thought, because this is never a scenario that ever happens. But now Bubba Wallace has been able to switch to the 45 car, and he just won a race this week to advance himself in the playoffs.
Our producer David Moses made a face at Bubba Wallace.
Yeah, no, that's the name I was waiting for. I see that he's 19th in the Cup Series. Is that good? Or
That's okay. He didn't win, so he didn't get to make the playoffs. But he is, again, racing for the owner's playoffs instead now. He's also racing for Michael Jordan with that team. And I think he's a pretty solid race car driver. I really like him, but he is going to be someone that has potential to really build himself for the future.
Please tell me that they wear Jordan branded fire suits.
They do.
Oh
and
my god,
that's
cool.
In fact, for the race that was won by Kurt Busch in Kansas earlier this year, he was basically driving a giant Jordan shoebox. Branded car. It looked basically like a really sick pair of Jordan kicks. And that was a really cool thing that they've been able to do. They have Jordan branding on the uniforms and stuff like that as well.
They can't catch on fire if they look in that icy. I live by that.
What do you, and not to get off NASCAR too far, but I know this is a totally different league of racing. It's like asking an NFL fan about the XFL. But how do you feel about Formula One trying to get into North America? And maybe they have a race coming up in Chicago. I saw that. They did one in Miami not too long ago. And I did actually follow that a little bit more than I would NASCAR. Nothing more than just watching the race. But
Drive to Survive on Netflix.
Yeah, I did see that one too. I did see some of that too.
Of that now, yeah.
Yeah, so they have a reality show coming out for NASCAR too?
Well, it's not a reality show. It's basically their version of Drive to Survive.
Yeah.
I think it's great for F1 to be able to be more popular in America. I think racing as a whole, if people can get into that, that's great. I personally don't like F1 nearly as much as NASCAR. Yeah. My roommate loves F1 and kind of feels the same way about NASCAR that I do about F1. But I think it's great if anyone is able to follow sports of any kind. I just think, you know, between an hour-long race where, you know, 5 minutes in and you already know the winner is not really my thing.
Yeah.
But some people like that as well. I want to circle back though to the playoffs because I didn't get to explain it's a 10.
Go for it.
So it's a 10 race format for the playoffs. Every three races, four of the drivers get eliminated, and then for the final race, which I think is kind of annoying, honestly, they just whoever is the best of the four drivers remaining in the finishing order of that final race gets to be the champion. So that's the last thing that. I wanted to be able to – obviously, you can dig more into it. We don't have enough time to go into everything about it, but that's the gist of the playoffs.
Let me hit you with this. What's the next big race to watch, and are we expecting the first ever right-handed turn in NASCAR?
We've had plenty of right-handed turns. In fact, there are six road courses this season on the schedule, and there have been – there used to only be two every year, but they have really, really added on to that. And
Dane was so ready for that joke, and Ferguson immediately hit him with the fact. I love that.
See, but that's okay, though, because everyone thinks about NASCAR's left turns, and I'm glad to see that NASCAR is finally, you know, having a lot more
diversity in
the races that they have. The big race to think about next is Bristol, which is this Saturday night, so I'm going to be watching the Bristol race and listening to the Pulse of Redbird Nation, WZMD, cover the ISU
nice
football
plug right
game.
There.
Nice so plug.
It's going to be fun to watch both. It's going to be Bristol is a well-known track for just great racing. The Bristol Night Race is a fantastic race that everyone looks forward to every year, and having it as an elimination race for NASCAR just adds to the drama entirely.
You fixed kind of a plug there. I'll finish it here. It's David Moses and Blake Bogart on the call, two friends of the pod, obviously. David, the producer, and Blake, one of our favorite guest hosts. So they'll be on the call from Hancock Stadium Saturday night. So while you watch the race at Bristol, like Braden, tune in to Redbird Football on 103.3 WZND. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to get into Pick 6, which is our game. We pick six winners for this weekend's NFL slate, Week 2. We'll be right back on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome into 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. It's The Red Zone, and it's Pick 6, the NFL weekly segment where we discuss who will win six different NFL games. We do the primetime games, and we do a little bit of some random games we pick. And this week, we had a couple more random games to pick because we killed two birds with one stone with the Bears and Packers playing each other. So that gets rid of two of our local teams and it being Sunday Night Football. Primetime Bears.
So
we'll see how that goes.
Do we want me to start with this? I think I'm the biggest Bears fan here. Do we want me to start?
Yeah, so I'll say this. The one we're picking right now, as I said, you got the Bears, you got the Packers in Lambeau, Sunday Night Football, the undefeated Bears versus the winless Packers. All right. David.
All right, I'm sorry, Bears fans. I'm going to have to go with the Packers here. I know Dane is losing his mind. I'm speaking from a realistic perspective, putting my diehard Bears hat down. Aaron Rodgers had a week to construct the offensive game plan against a defense he has shredded for almost a decade now. I think that, that's just a recipe for disaster for this Bears defense. So I'm going to have to go with the Packers.
Mr. Dreyfus?
This is going to be a tough one. You know what? The spread is disrespectful to the Bears after a great week one win against the 49ers.
Was it 9.5?
I think it's up to 10.5 at this point.
Oh, come on.
But give me the Packers in this one. I think it's going to be a relatively closer game. But don't bet against Aaron Rodgers and the team he owns.
Mr. Fogerson?
Okay, so as the resident non-Bears nor Packer fan, I am going to have to take the Packers. I'm sorry, Mikey, but... Okay, so everyone last week acted like, oh, it's such a surprise that the Bears beat the 49ers. I thought it was a pretty even matchup. The 49ers were not really special, and they've been injury prone the past few years, so you can only be thought of as a really good team for so long when that is the case. Weather was also a factor. It was a sloppy week one for Green Bay, but and you know they lost Devontae, which carried my Raiders even though they couldn't win with them. And obviously that's a big difference for Green Bay to have to get used to. But when you got a team with not nearly as much offensive talent heading into this week, I would say they will be fine. I don't think it's going to be a super high-scoring game because the Packers are still trying to figure out the offense and the Bears have a pretty solid, still a very solid defense at least. But I would say the Packers have to win this one.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't sleep on my Bears defense. Dominic Robinson, the rookie, had an excellent game to start off. He had 2 sacks in that game, so I'm looking for him to, you know.
I was at the game. He looked pretty mid.
Oh, come on. I'm looking for him to take Aaron Rodgers.
I could have had 2 sacks in the rain on Trey Lance.
Steve C. said Green Bay as well, which makes me happy because I get to recreate the famous meme of Mike Ditka being the only one that picks the Bears.
The Bears.
There is no doubt in my mind.
Does that come with a kind of Italian beef?
This is Pack. Yes, it does. Baptized, of course. This is Packers week, and every time, every Packers week, every season, I get myself worked up that it's going to happen. But this season, I feel like it is because Rodgers had no target over 50 yards against the Vikings, obviously no touchdowns, and only 5 receptions for his highest receiver, A.J. Dillon.
So you're telling me he had as many throws over 50 yards as the Bears have had 4,000-yard passers?
Oh, this isn't about history. This isn't about history.
This is about history. History's bound to repeat itself.
2022/3. The Bears are 1-0, and the Packers are 0-1.
Okay, buddy.
And that's how I look at it.
Settle down.
You know, like I said, coming from a realistic, and I know we got other games, but coming from a realistic standpoint, if I'm the Bears, I would rather have an Aaron Rodgers who came off of a win other than an angry Aaron Rodgers who just got embarrassed.
Angry Aaron Rodgers can I mean, I'm not going to say that Aaron Rodgers isn't good. He's great. He's a legend. He'll be a Hall of Famer. Angry Aaron Rodgers can air the ball out all he wants on a dime. If his receivers are dropping it again, there's nothing they can do about it.
You know, you say future Hall
for
of Famer.
For their sake, they better not drop it.
Yeah, honestly. Hall of Famer, better than Tom Brady, too.
That's we're going to save that segment for I think
I
we decided
like, I'm making you worked up.
We're
going
to save that segment for Packers and Bucks week. That'll be we'll let David and whoever our guest is that week kind of go to take a break for that segment. We'll just let Dane and I battle it out for for the Bucks and Packers. But this week, as you guys all said, to go back around the horn, everyone Green Bay, me, the Bears, and you guys will be hearing from me next week.
We'll see about that.
Commanders and Lions. Commanders 1-0, Lions 0-1. David, what do you think in this one?
Lions put up a good fight last week against the Eagles. They did lose by 10 points, but it, you know, that the score margin does not really do justice of, you know, the brand of football that they play down there in Detroit. It's kind of consistent from last year. Hard nose, hard. It's kind of what the system that Eberflus is trying to bring over here with the Bears is just that the Lions have done a really good job with it ever since acquiring Dan Campbell as head coach. But I just don't know if it's going to be enough to get the win versus the Commanders. Carson Wentz had a really good week last week, along with Jahan Dotson, the rookie, and who else is it? Terry McLaurin.
Yeah,
he has a pretty good, you know, wide receiver room. I think they're going to kind of expose the Lions secondary because that's one of the only, you know, weak spots to that defense over there in Detroit. So I'm going to have to go with the Commanders.
Dane, what do you think?
Okay, so we got the battle of Goff and Wentz, like round like 4. You told me 5 years ago watching the Rams and Eagles duke it out in what looked to be just like the best football game in years that they would be on these teams. I would have called you crazy. I'm going to roll here.
And he's low of a stakes compared to that.
Yeah, I'm going to roll here with the Washington Commanders. And I mean, it's a game of two coaches you don't want to get in a bar fight with in Ron Rivera and Dan Campbell. And it's just
Riverboat Ron.
It's Riverboat Ron. You know what? It comes down to weapons. I'm going with the Commanders. I like Jahan Dotson, like Logan Thomas, like Terry McLaurin. And I like Curtis Samuel, too, who is looking like to be this year's Debo Samuel right off the bat. So,
Braden.
This is one of several games that I kind of toss around a little bit. I try my best, if Gavin is listening, to try and find a way to think of the Lions as a winner in this one. But, I mean, the offense was good for both teams in week one. I think Washington just has a much higher likelihood of repeating it. And I think either way, the offense is going to be the important factor for this matchup.
For all the reasons you guys said as well, I couldn't agree more. I'm going to go with the Commanders as well. And that means Steve is the Dicka pick homer this week because he has his own Lions in this game. And I think if he was on, he'd give us a valid reason for the Lions. Because, okay, I'm not the type to believe.
They're favored in the game.
Yeah, I'm not the type to believe the Lions hype. I'm not a fan of it, to be completely honest with you. But they held their own against the Eagles. They just did that thing again where they hold their own the whole game and then just lose it at the end, just like last year.
And Carson Wentz got that dog in it.
I don't know what Steve, you know, knows about the Lions that we don't. This is the second week he picked the Lions. I think last week was a little bit of a tougher pill to swallow to think that he would take the Lions over the Eagles. But, you know, maybe he knows something we don't know.
Moving on to the Bucs and the Saints. It'll be the Bucs visiting New Orleans, and that one, what do we think? David, you go ahead.
Bucs and Saints, I'm going to go with Tom Brady. And the Bucs, just a better team. I don't really have a full rundown on the analysis. I just think Tom Brady is, you know, it was an interesting game to watch when it was Brady versus Breeze. Brady versus Winston, you know, it seems a little bit watered
down. The battle of former Bucs quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too.
Jameis is still mad that Tom stole his spot.
But in the end, I'm going to have to go with the Bucs on this one.
Dan, what do you think?
We're entering the post-Giselle era of Tom Brady. It's not going to be a pretty one, especially like his plastic surgery. I'm going the Saints here, and I have reasons, actually. Godwin's banged up, probably going to miss the game. Julio missed practice today.
Fernandez, I'm going on, too.
Yeah, he's got a hammy, which is it's always him. And I'm not talking about like a ham sandwich, which he had plenty of during the offseason. So I'm rolling with the Saints here because they also get in the head of the Buccaneers when they play them. Like, that defense is legit. They shut them out last year. I think they have a better roster, at least on the offensive side of the ball, than when they shut them out last year. I expect a big game here from Jameis Winston. I think it's going to be a low-scoring affair. Give me the Saints.
For me, I'm going with the Buccaneers on this one. The Saints couldn't limit the run last week, and, you know, if they continue to struggle in that department, you're not going to be able to beat a team that's got Tom Brady. You need to be able to limit one or the other, and you're not going to be able to limit the consistent passing from a team that's got Tom Brady. They just snuck it out last weekend, and the Falcons falconed again. So,
Braden, I love how you worded that. I love
Falcons
how
Falcons falconed again.
The Falcons did falcon again. I love how you worded that last part, though. You just can't bet against Tom Brady, because that's what I always tell Dane. We'll Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr.
Okay,
the day that he loses will be the day that I stop betting on Brady.
I wrote
his initials on my sheet for pick six, because it also stands for Tampa Bay, for all you guys, but I wrote TB for Tom Brady, because it doesn't matter who's banged up. Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. against a decent Saints team. I'd maybe think about it a little bit more if it was a little bit of a better team. I know they squeaked out the win in week one. Eric Schweizer, if you're listening to this, former news and sports intern who turned huge Saints fan. Well, he always was a huge Saints fan.
Yeah, he's not fair weather.
Yeah, no, he's not
fair weather. He's a poor weather
fan. Yeah, he's a poor weather fan. Yeah, he's kind of down in the dumps with it all the time. Yeah, he's like, oh, man, we stink. Yeah. And then he texts, he's like, what did he say? Oh, we kind of squeaked out a win, I guess. It wasn't a good one. But like, and meanwhile, the Bears fans barely squeaked out a win. And we're like, yeah, let's go. We look at this game against the Saints, and I think there's no way you can't bet against Brady in this one. So I'm going to go with the Bucs.
Well, there is a way. I did it. Continuing on.
It's funny. We have, through three games, we have one person picking opposite. Everyone else is in agreement. So this time it was Dane with the Saints.
In all fairness, though, before we move on, I will say for the Saints, they usually have a pretty good record against the Bucs, even since
in the regular season,
has moved on to the Bucs. So fair.
I mean, Brady ended Breeze's season, but that was like the only time he's beaten the Bucs have beaten the Saints in the last like 3 years.
Yeah, this
season more
awesome.
Like career.
Or career, that's what I meant. Yeah. First, now we can take a look at Tennessee and Buffalo.
I'll start with this one.
Yeah, go for it.
I am so on the Josh Allen hype train. I will tell you, I was on my way home Thursday. I believe, it was Thursday, and I was watching the Bills versus the Rams game and literally losing it at how convicted and how good Josh Allen played. I think it was somewhere in the beginning of the third quarter he took a hit that he just did not like. And I saw it right there because he got up and said something to the defensive player. I said it right there, that's going to be where Josh Allen wins this game. And he went out there and he just destroyed. So I'm going with the Bills. I think that they're going to have a very good year this year.
Dan, you go ahead for this one.
I think Chris Berman puts it the best. No one circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. Give me the Buffalo Bills in this one. They're the best team. They're going to run the gauntlet this year. Like you said, Josh Allen's got that dog in him. They've got a great roster. The only little thing stuck in the back of my mind is that Jonathan Taylor performance against him last year. Mm. Where he just ran the ball down their throats.
So you get worried about Henry.
Yeah, because Derrick Henry's also that guy. Like, and Dontrell Hilliard missed practice today, so they're going to get a full serving of Henry. I feel like I don't want to speak for everyone, but I'm sensing that we all agree that Buffalo might be coming down the
pipe. Because we're running out of time, so I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I took Buffalo, so did Steve. Braden, what are you thinking?
Bills. Yeah. Bills.
Okay. I thought for a second you were going to go with Titans. I was like, hold on. We can extend the show because I want to hear why.
Yeah.
But no, that's going to be Buffalo for everyone there. Finally, we're all in agreement. Taking a look at the Eagles and the Vikings. I'll start on this one. I think the Vikings showed a lot of good things against the Packers, obviously.
Yes.
I think I'm going to say the Vikings in this one. Dan, are we finally in agreement on one of these?
No, because you just bet on Kirk Cousins in primetime. That's the dumbest thing you've ever done.
Oh, man. Are you telling me you picked the Eagles in this one?
Well, I like the Eagles better, but it just made the pick way easier when it was like Kirk Cousins
in primetime.
You like that? You like that? Yeah, I like betting the Eagles spread against you, Kirk.
So I went with the Vikings. Dan goes with the Eagles. David, what do you think?
This is a tough one for me, one that I didn't really do too much research on, but I'll go off of what I saw last week, and oh my goodness, Justin Jefferson was
that receiving
fire.
Core is awesome.
Like I just couldn't like I played against him in fantasy last week, so I was hoping that he didn't do good, but
I played against him too. Ouch.
On his first catch, I think he took it. I can't even remember.
He
took two touchdowns to the house. I know that. So I'm probably going to have to say, I know it's on primetime, Monday Night Football. I'm going to go with the Vikings.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I'm going Vikings too. I was going to say, David, I beat you single-handedly with Justin Jefferson. That was really, I'm just not going to bet against Justin Jefferson again. It's a very much a toss-up. I think Devontae Smith is really good in primetime, I think, as an option. But I think Justin Jefferson's a better option, and I think he will lead the team to victory.
I like that Devonta Smith saying, because you know what? He was in primetime in Bama. Oh, my gosh. That dude could run with the best of them.
So Steve also said the Vikings, so that means we're going to have Dane be on a lonely island again with the Eagles.
I do look like Andy Samberg, so that's pretty fitting.
Nice pun there. I like them, too. That's something we can agree on. Despite no football picks in agreement, pretty much, that's something we can agree on.
Right, and I think I'm the king of puns and segues, and you know what? Yeah. Maybe the little bit of the comedic relief on the show, but I know what I'm talking about. I swear.
Let's see if you know what you're talking about in tonight's Thursday night game. This is a toss-up, the Chargers and Chiefs, but I'm going to start again on this one. And I liked what I saw with Patty Mahomes and the Chiefs against the Cardinals. As much as the Cardinals are in an interesting spot right now, they are not a bad team per se. And the Chiefs made them look silly. The Chargers team is really good. Don't get me wrong. But the defense is great. But when you stack these two offenses against each other, I will very much think the Chiefs will have the best in this one. So I'm going to go with the Chiefs.
But you know, not only that, I'm going to keep it short. I'm going to go with the Chiefs. But when watching Patrick Mahomes play last week, it kind of looked like he was a little upset. It's like, I heard all you guys talking. I was even one of them. I heard all you guys talking about how I lost Tyreek. I'm not going to be good. Our offense is not going to be good. Then goes out and tosses six touchdowns out in the opening week.
Exactly.
He played with a little bit of a big chip on his shoulder, and I think he's going to carry that into this week or tonight in a few minutes against the Chargers.
Dane?
Give me the Los Angeles Chargers. I'm loving it. Fade Dane is alive and well. I'm rolling with it. I got a little parlay tonight. Got my Mike Will Made It Anytime touchdown score. Got Jay Herbo over 280 passing yards.
You're speaking a different language right now.
Okay, I'll stop. But I do have the Chargers plus 4.5 because I think that's just disrespectful.
Yeah, for me, it's a toss-up. Like you said, Mikey, recent matchups have been very competitive, very high-scoring. They've been great games to watch. It's definitely a game you do not want to miss tonight, but don't overthink it either. It's going to be Chiefs.
So, wow. Again.
This is either going to be really good or really bad for me.
That means we put Dane on the Lonely Island 3 out of 6 picks, meaning he picked the Saints when no one else did, the Eagles when no one else did, and the Chargers when no one else did. This, like you said, Dan, this could be make or break for you.
I'm sitting at 2-4, so honestly, this could get me back into the win column and jump me into first place.
If Dane hits on all three of these, I think next week's Red Zone, it's just Dane by himself talking.
Yeah, you said the Dane Hour. It'd be a lot of hockey talks and betting.
Our faculty advisors, Steve and Deb, are crying right now. They would hate that.
Well, let's hope that the picks don't hit then, because Braden just cemented that. We're gonna wrap it up here. I almost said we're going to go quick break, but nope, we're going to wrap it up here. That was it for this edition of The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Thank you for listening, and have a good night.
Hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again? Download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.